the supermarkets in Portland. And I'm sure our community would love and enjoy it because the quality is so good. If only there was peace.
I've been speaking with Deep Mala Mala. She is the country director for South Sudan with Mercy Corps. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me. A very big thank you to Portland community for their support, which has been with us always. It motivates us tremendously.
For KABU Evening News, I'm Sam Bowman.
KABU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of African Roots, celebrating the roots of jazz and Brazilian music, Wednesday and Thursday, May 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. at the historic Mission Theater in Portland. This all-ages two-day event features the Devin Phillips Quartet, American Music Program, Pop Goji, Wamba, Mike Crenshaw, LaRonda Steele, and more. Again, that's African Roots, celebrating the roots of jazz and Brazilian music, Wednesday and Thursday, May 10th and 11th at 8 p.m. at the historic Mission Theater, 1624 Northwest Gleason Street in Portland. More information can be found at kabu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. The only program of its type in Oregon or Southwest Washington. I'm Steven Siegel, and my co-host is running a few minutes late. He should be here soon. Also sitting in with us today is Alejandra Barragan. Hi, Alejandra. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Of course. And I'll also just let you know that Chris and I still haven't received all of our training, and we have John Walsh sitting in with us, just in case we need him for something. Thank you, John.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
All right. Well, Alejandra, we're excited to have you with us. And you are, of course, a teacher in the Reynolds School District, part of Reynolds Education Association. Why don't you tell us a little bit about where you teach, how long you've been teaching, that kind of a thing.
Of course. So I work at Alder Elementary as a second grade Spanish immersion teacher. It's one of the only immersion programs we have in East County. And this is my seventh year teaching there.
And so what's that like, teaching there?
It's interesting. And as a lot of people say, it's Reynolds and it has its struggles. And we are always needing a little bit of more support. And right now we're in our budget and bargaining, and it's, I think as across the state, we can say that it's looking pretty tough right now.
It is, right. With budgets are looking really bleak right now, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about your union involvement. How did you get started in union, and just tell us what you've been doing since you got started?
Well, I've understood what union is because my father is a union welder here in Portland. So I pretty much knew. He always talked about my brothers out in the union work and such, but I really didn't have a perspective of what that meant to be in a union as a teacher or an educator. So when I joined REA, I saw that my former fifth grade teacher was the president at the time. I was like, oh, cool. My former fifth grade teacher is the president. Of course I want to join. But I really didn't get much involved until my second year teaching when my local went on strike. And I really just saw the need of how our district really doesn't communicate with stakeholders. We had families coming up to our picket line and pretty much asking us, like, why are you guys here? What's going on? My thing was like, so has the district not told you we're on strike? Like, that's why your children are not coming to school. And they're like, no, we don't know anything. So there was a need for me to work with community partners to really get the word out, like, we're on strike and these are the reasons why. We're on strike because we want to work for better conditions for our students and also for ourselves, because better working conditions for educators is better working conditions for our students.
Yes.
So I wrote a quick press release to Univision and had them come over and interview us and see what's going on. And we also had a rally. And I would like to say that because of that work, we kind of pushed the district to kind of see, like, our community is now getting involved. So that's how my work got started. And our REA leadership invited me to be on the exec board, and here I still am, fifth year in, still working on community organizing for my local.
Yeah. Great. So let's talk about this year. You decided to run for OEA, that's our statewide teachers union, Oregon Education Association. You decided to run for vice president, and there was already a very experienced member who had declared a candidacy, right? And I think had her eyes on that position probably for quite a while. So why did you decide fairly late in the process to run?
So yes, I pretty much decided a couple weeks before the deadline was to turn in your signatures to be able to be on the ballot. I, of course, did not want to run from the floor, so I want to make sure that I was able to participate fully on the run. And one of the biggest reasons was because I felt that we needed to have some contested races. I looked pretty much and saw that all of our positions that were up at this year at the RA were not being contested. And I know that I had a message I wanted to share, especially during these times. So I decided to see who would support me in this candidacy and support me in the campaign, and I just went for it. I felt that I have a message that I had to bring to our members across the state, especially I wanted to bring the message of how we need to work more with our community partners, coalition partners, stakeholders, and really talking about ethnic studies and presenting that bill across the state and how important it is to make sure that we're working together to educate ourselves on how we're going to teach our students and how we can educate ourselves in the process.
Yeah. And one of the things you said, it made me curious if you have any ideas about why do you think there were a lot of uncontested races? What do you think is holding more people back from wanting to run for office? Do you have any ideas?
Well, some of the things that I've observed is that I feel like a lot of our members who are involved in their locals, and they really want to create a bigger emphasis on the work that they're doing locally in their communities with their students and their locals. But I also feel like we also have, I feel, this thing in our OA leadership where we've kind of see who's next, who's going to be up for election and who's going to run, and we kind of get that going. And if there's already people who have been appointed, well, they get to run and such. So I think it's also one of those things where we have lots of things going on already in our classrooms, as all of these different variables that adding on a leadership role is kind of becomes burdensome, especially in these times, especially. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a little bit more complicated. I feel like a lot of our members are not just educators, they're also family members, and they also have a community and a lot of pressures. So to be add on another one, which is to represent our members at a statewide level, can be a little bit tough on some families.
Right. So do you feel like there's sort of this natural progression of candidates that start out sort of in some lower positions, and then they eventually run for vice president, and then they run for president? It's sort of a, is it almost a given a little bit?
I kind of feel like it is. I feel like it's one of those things where I feel like you almost have to earn it, show that you worked your steps, you put your experiences, you were part of the right committees, and then you get to be part of the executive board.
Yes. So tell us more about what your experience was like running for vice president. What were some of the highlights, some of the lows, if there were lows? And also, I was just really curious, you know, I mean, you are a Latina woman. So in what ways do you think that might have had any impact on this experience? What do you take away from all this?
The highlights were definitely being able to talk with members across the state and really being able to see what everyone is doing and locally and in their UNISERVs, being able to go to Bend and them having questions about how they can support their immigrant families, and listening to our Portland area and seeing what they're doing here and how a lot of us are doing or seeking kind of the same resources, and how can we bridge those together? So we're all trying to, especially in these times, like I'm saying, like we're seeing so many issues with our immigrant families, where we just want to be able to support, but we don't really know where to ask or where to go. And I feel like that was a great experience to have, because I'm still going to be part of the OEA board, and I work, I'm the OEA Ethnic Minority Director. So I work with the Human and Civil Rights Committee and the Ethnic Minority Affairs Committee. And one of our works is how can we make sure that we're working with the different departments to seek the needs that our members are asking for. So that was that's my biggest takeaway, that I want to make sure that I'm continuing to do that work in the role that I currently have. I think one of the biggest lows was an experience of campaigning. I think that was one of the biggest ones. It really was kind of tough to kind of like not really know how to really get out there, and not wanting to leave my students because I didn't want to leave them without a substitute teacher, because that's another one of the struggles, is when you're in a classroom in a very low poverty school, and especially an emerging classroom, not anybody will take your classroom. And I had an experience actually when I had to take a half day where I had to split my students. So it was very, that was one of the lows where I really wanted to get to parts of the state, but I didn't want to leave my students alone and having to miss educational opportunities because I'm campaigning.
Right.
So
you couldn't take them all with you.
I couldn't take them all with me.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about just in terms of just being a Latina? Were there any times where you felt like where you were treated a little bit differently because of that, and any sort of negative impact?
I think as a person of color, you kind of do wear that extra hat of you may be the expert who may have the answers, or like, what are your thoughts on this and what are your thoughts on that? And I think that's an extra hat that a lot of people of color kind of do carry or have to carry, because you don't want to make sure that there's no misconceptions that actually happen. I think I really felt the Latina woman part, the actual day of the RA and the questions that we got, and just kind of really seeing that we don't, although we seem to be progressive educators, it doesn't always seem to show once we're actually having conversations.
Yes.
But I think that's more than anything that my experience is that I'm one of the things that we passed last RA was NBI 20 on institutional racism, and our need to educate our members on this, on the different things that our policies need to change for our students to be more beneficial in their education, but also our educators also suffer because of the systemic things that are going on in policies. So it was definitely, I think, one of those things of, as a person of color, was I not a person of color? It is a question I do ask myself.
Uh-huh.
Had I not been a person of color, would I have maybe had a better opportunity?
Right, yeah.
But we can't really know that now, can we?
No, it's hard to say. You know, I just wanted to mention, you know, being at the Representative Assembly and hearing your speech, I found it really inspiring. And, you know, I remember talking with you a couple times about your campaign, and you told me some things, and I just could sort of sense that there was this fire behind it, but you weren't really letting it on. But then when you had your speech, you really let it all out there. And I think a lot of people really appreciated that. I know that I did. What did that feel like, giving that speech for you?
Like I said, it was one of those things of why I ran. I felt like I had a message that had to be shared. And when we think of the OERA, it's all of the leaders across the state, all of the leaders that represent each local. And I wanted to make sure that what I had to share in those 5 short minutes that I only have was something that if I won or I didn't win, I was able to give our members something to think about, something that when they go out back to their locals, something that they can actually try and implement. So I really talked about my personal experiences as being a daughter of immigrants and having to have been called a wetback and what kind of traumas that kind of triggers. And especially as a introvert, because I am an introvert, and what kind of that does to a child who already has a hard time kind of stepping out and engaging in a classroom, but then having to experience students calling you names and telling you to go back to Mexico, or having educators change your name because they can't pronounce Alejandra and calling you Alex. So it's like one of those things that I wanted to share out, but also how we need to, as we lose fair share, because we're going to lose it pretty soon, why are we not already engaging with our community? Why aren't we already out there? And also, how can we make sure that it's not a one-shot deal? Because I think right now we had our big push for May 1st to be out there and do something and wear red. Well, now it's over. So what are we going to do now? So I feel like that's one of the messages I wanted to make sure that I brought out there.
Yes.
It's not a one-shot deal. This is something that should have happened a long time ago, especially as educators, because our union, although we are here to represent our members, but we also have to think about who we're representing. We're representing our students and our communities. And as we lose fair share, we want to make sure we're already getting involved, and not after the fact when we've already lost fair share and then we're like, where are communities? Where are students who are going to be backing us up? We should get there before then. And it's almost already too late.
Yeah. And I was so happy to hear you also at least give a little bit of a plug to social movement unionism. I'm sure that Chris and I will be doing complete shows just on that topic alone. I just want to remind let you know, if you're just tuning in, that you're listening to KBOO Portland, and this is Labor Radio. And Chris,
hey,
good to see you.
Yes, sorry I'm late.
That's all right.
I was listening. Really good conversation so far.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Representative Assembly. You did some campaigning beforehand. You talked about that and opportunities to talk with people around the state. And a lot of the action happened at the Representative Assembly, which for those of you listeners that don't have any idea of what goes on there, it's an annual gathering of about 1,000 teachers who are representatives of their local unions, and not just teachers, some other educators as well. And it just happened a couple of weeks ago. There were a lot of speeches, there was campaigning, there was voting. There were also reports shared with members, awards, recognition. Members had opportunities to bring proposals to the floor for debate and vote. So it was a busy couple of days. And I'm curious about, in addition to your run for VP, what were some of your thoughts just overall about this year's representative assembly?
Well, I like to see the change that has happened, like I mentioned, NBI 20 Institutional Racism, and how that kind of has created a shift in the work that we're doing now. The conversation that our Teacher of the Year had and the impacts of our students, and also having Johnny Lake there as one of the speakers as we talk about things, and the NBIs that were brought up.
Now, NBIs stand for
National
New Business Items which are basically, these are proposals that members bring to the floor, and we have debate and discussion, and then vote. And if they are approved, then for the following year, Oregon Education Association is charged with following through on those new business items, those proposals that are voted for.
Yeah, they're basically yearly goals that pretty much move our union in that year until the next RA.
Right. One of the things that, I mean, I think I sort of came away from the whole experience with some, I would say some inspiration, some positive thinking about it, and also some head scratching or questions, or I don't know if I'd call them negative, some sort of negative feelings, but I was hoping to talk a little bit about some of those and also get your take on anything. Feel free to, any of you to chime in.
Well, and unfortunately, I was not able to attend the rep assembly, so I'd be really curious to hear your perspectives and what it was that you thought went really well that gave you hope from the RA.
Yeah. Actually, I was thinking, because I was thinking about this, and I thought, I think I want to end with what I'm hopeful about.
Okay.
I want to start in on
just some
of the head scratchers
and
get those kind of out of the way. I think one maybe wasn't a head scratcher, but it was sort of a wondering is, you know, we started our everything with a national anthem, and I've learned recently just how racist the national anthem is, and the person who wrote it, how racist he was, and that there were actually verses in the national anthem that were that are no longer in it because they're so racist, and yet we start our meeting with that, and it just got me to think, why not start our meeting instead with Solidarity Forever, which is an amazing union song. And so that was one of the thoughts that I had, and I thought about maybe that's an NBI for
next year,
for a future representative assembly. Another one was, we had some pretty good debate and discussion about taking money from the Gates Foundation. And for you listeners out there, the Gates Foundation has a lot of money. I'm sure you know that, but they are putting a lot of their money towards educational, what would you call them?
Well, they're using, so they're a nonprofit, right? That philanthropic foundation that's funded by Bill and Melinda Gates, and they use that money in different ways. And one of their big projects is education, right? So they put a lot of money into Common Core State Standards, tens of millions of dollars into the development of those standards, and they continue to kind of channel and direct that wealth in order to kind of influence the policies that they believe are best for public education.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had a lot of debate about it, whether or not we should take the money, whether or not we were already receiving money. And one of the things that really got me was this argument that was put forth that, well, the NEA, which is sort of the parent of OEA, so the National Education Association, they haven't taken any money from the Gates Foundation. And I actually disputed that, and I said, now wait a minute, I just did a simple Google and I can see right here that we've taken quite a bit of money. Here's something where we just took $500,000. And I was told, oh no, that went to the NEA Foundation, as if that's some completely separate entity that has no connections to the NEA. And yet that was the argument that was being put forth by, unfortunately, by our OEA leadership. And then a third one, and then I'll try to move to some positives in our little remaining time, was our to-be president was giving a report on the OEA Foundation. And he was talking about the one of the things that they're doing is there's some Fred Meyer. They have some working relationship with Fred Meyer, the Fred Meyer Rewards Program, and I think a certain small amount of money goes towards the OEA Foundation that comes in through Fred Meyer. And so Fred Meyer is getting this great publicity. Oh, look at Fred Meyer! They're helping out, you know, the teachers, and they're getting they might be getting a boost to their business too, right? I mean, there might be some people that think, hey, Fred Meyer is giving to teachers, I'm going to go shop at Fred Meyer's. And yet, Fred Meyer / Kroger, same ownership, they were one of the top three donors for the No on Measure 97 campaign that would have brought millions of dollars to our state out of corporate taxes. Mm. And that was a head scratcher.
Yeah. Well,
why are we doing this? I don't know if it's just a sort of a lack of awareness or a belief that it doesn't matter or what.
Yeah, I wonder if it has something to do with kind of compartmentalizing, right? And seeing during that election cycle, which you were kind of talking about, where we really need to be building between RAs and between elections, building up that groundswell of support. And so when election time comes, we're really mad at Kroger, we're really mad at these people, but shortly thereafter, we have a tendency to forget as the news cycle moves on. And yeah. Then we hear that, well, if I use my card and give them my name and address and phone number, then I can also, every time I swipe my card, be sending money to the OEA or my local, you know? So it's like we compartmentalize those things instead of connecting the dots.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the positives were, I thought there were some really great new business items that were brought to the floor. There was some great debate, and a lot of good ones, I thought, passed. Most of the NBIs that were brought to the floor passed.
Hmm.
And there were some good, there are too many to really to go through. I think there were maybe 25 or so that came to the floor and probably 20 that passed. But the one specifically about not taking Gates money did pass. Mm-hmm. There were a couple in regards to state standardized testing that passed. One was about a moratorium on the test. This is another topic that we mm-hmm. can talk about, why we do these tests and the funding that it takes away from other much more important things in schools.
Mm-hmm.
We also passed something specifically to continue our work on institutional racism, to look at, to paraphrase, it was sort of looking at common language and culturally responsive practices. And then we passed something that looks at giving more resources to educators to assist families with immigration issues, including some sort of a template to write a reference letter for ICE, because sometimes that's something that families need.
Mm.
So there was some really cool stuff that passed.
Yeah. Alejandra, was there anything that you, other than what Stephen here has mentioned, were there any other NBIs that, new business items that you were really hopeful about, that you were excited to see come to the floor?
I was excited to see the continuation of trying to work on institutional racism and actually doing some more of that groundwork because our first NBI was kind of to create awareness And I feel like across the state, our educators are ready for either for the education piece or the actual taking action. And I really feel like it's a little bit like a domino effect. So what NBIs can we put out there to make sure that once we're ready to really get in the systemic changes, we can actually get there? So I feel like those NBIs were really important. Mm. And also we had some NBIs on how we can make sure that we're working with our communities and stakeholders across this, in our locals, and how to make sure that OEA kind of gives us supports. How can we make sure that our statewide union has access for the rest of the locals on how we can engage in that?
Mm.
So I felt like that was really important too. These conversations are happening, and in this next year, we'll see how that works out.
Awesome. Alejandra, thank you so much for being here. I'm sorry that I was late and that I wasn't able to actually be face-to-face during this. My name is Chris Reiser. Thank you guys so much for listening in. Thank you to our engineer and for our sitter-inner here while we get set up. You've been listening to Labor Radio, and please tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of screening of the documentary We the People 2.0 on Friday, May 12th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. We the People 2.0 tells the story of people across the United States who have faced decades of environmental assaults, such as oil trains, pipelines, and fracking, and what they are doing about it. There will be a panel discussion following the screening featuring Portland-based community rights and environmental activists. Again, that's Justice Within Reach on Friday, May 12th from 6 to 10 p.m. at First Unitarian Church Elliott Chapel, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of